living on your own, hoping the streets will somehow occupy your mind. You fight the hurt when you're alone. Seems as though reality dropped another life at your feet. Now that you face another day, it leaves you feeling like you'd like to take it home. Your eyes see things and say, no way. Feels like there's an enemy in everyone who loves you.
Motherland Media is on the air. You are listening to African Perspectives on the Motherland Media Network, on timeforanawakening.com, and blacktalkradionetwork.com. African Perspectives, where we talk about the issues of our day from an African worldview, an African-centered perspective. This program is unapologetically African. It is a custom in the African tradition to ask elders for permission to speak. Having been granted permission, to our ancestors whose shoulders we stand on, to our elders whose shadows we walk in, I greet you, my dear brothers and sisters and friends, in the language of one of the greatest civilizations on this planet. It gave the world the basic disciplines of knowledge of science, math, architecture, music, writing, law, religion, you name it, we did it. The Greeks called it Egypt, but they called themselves Kemet, and Kemet means land of the blacks. So I greet you all in the Kemetic language, the word of peace, Hotep. It is always an honor and a privilege to pour libation because we truly do stand on the shoulders of those who came before us. We're going to use water because water has no enemies. Water is the great cleanser, the great purifier. We pour water into the earth to invoke the spirits of our ancestors, and we say the word Ashe, which simply means so be it. So we pour this libation to God for all that God has done and for all that God will do. We say Ashe. We pour this libation to Mother Africa, birthplace of all humanity, everyone who has lived, everyone who is living, and everyone who will live in the future. We have a common ancestral root. We sashay. We pour this libation to the classical civilizations of Africa. I mentioned Kemet. Kemet was the height, the apex, the zenith of African high culture. But there were other cultures as well, such as Timari, Punt, and Nubia. So we pour this libation to classical civilizations of Africa. We sashay. We pour this libation to contemporary civilizations of Africa, of Ghana, Mali, Songhai, Benin, Great Zimbabwe, great civilizations that were flourishing while Europe was still in a medieval or dark age. So we pour this libation to those contemporary civilizations of Africa. We say Ashe. We pour this libation to the brothers and sisters who suffered the Ma'afa, the Infakani, the Holocaust of our enslavement, uprooted out of Africa, laying a carpet along the Atlantic Ocean. They are now in North America, Central America, South America, and throughout the diaspora. So we pour this libation to brothers and sisters who suffered the Holocaust of enslavement, of captivity. We do not know their names, but because of them, we are here. So we honor them in their sacrifice. We say Ashe. We pour libation to those men and women who fought against enslavement. If you ever heard me do a libation, you'll know that we were not slaves. I repeat, we were not slaves. We were captives. What does a slave want to do? It wants to get free. There's over 400 recorded revolts of our people fighting on the continent, throughout the Middle Passage, and this hemisphere. We resisted. We were not slaves. A slave is somebody or something that submits its will to a master, and we haven't and we will never submit. So we give honor and reverence to those men and women who fought. Denmark Vesey, Gabriel Prosser, Harriet Tubman, Nat Turner, and many, many others. We honor them. We respect them for always standing and fighting for the liberation of our people. We say Ashe. We pour this libation to those unborn, those young men and women who will once again lead us back on the stage of human history as a free and proud and productive people. We say ashe. We pour this libation to the spirit of brotherhood and sisterhood together for the union of family. We need each other. We don't have good community life because we don't have good family life. Conditions shape conduct and consciousness. The conditions in our community are bad. The conduct towards each other is bad because we lack consciousness. Consciousness is more than just awareness. It's a deeper understanding of who you are culturally, historically, and the necessity to come together to produce family, which is produces good community life. So he poured his libation to the spirit of brotherhood and sisterhood together for the union of family. We say ashe. Shem Hotep means go in peace. Asante Sana means thank you. Good morning, African world. You are listening to African Perspectives right here on the Motherland Media Network on timeforanawakening.com, blacktalkradionetwork.com, and I am your host, Brother Oshi. Good morning, family. I hope everything is well with you today. I hope you had hope you have a good day, that you have the opportunity and a chance to do everything you want to do, need to do, have to do, and must do, and or any other way that you can do it. And I hope the weather is accommodating for you to do that. But of course, if it is not, you do it anyway, because it has to be done. I first off want to thank Brother Jeff for sitting in for me on Friday and on Monday. And I want to thank Dr. Rogers and Dr. Bridges for calling in. I know Brother Jeff had a problem on Friday. And we're just like he said, we're still working out the bugs, and we are. We just talked to Brother Elliot. Elliot, of course, is with Time for an Awakening. And his program airs Fridays from 8 to 11 and Sunday from 7 to 10. That's p.m. And those are Eastern times. Brother Elliot, check him out. Time for an Awakening. Glad to be back. Had a good time. I was in West Palm Beach for a good friend of mine, Brother Skip Robinson, who worked at the Boys and Girls Club in Milwaukee and helped me and my good friend John Vos. We were football coaches together, and Skip helped facilitate that by providing me the opportunity to talk with the people at the Boys and Girls Club and to present them to who I am and what I'm about and what I wanted to do. And they said, cool, and made a clarion call out there, and John answered, and we were together for 30 years coaching football. Never had a losing season. Had a ball, had a great time, touched many lives, done some good things. Had a couple of people still got one in the pros now. Lance Kendrick, who now plays for the Green Bay Packers as a tight end. He was drafted by the St. Louis Rams, or now the L.A. Rams. But there were some other kids, too. And then, you know, you never know what impact that you make on someone. That's why you should always be your best. Do your best. Say your best. Because you never know. I mean, I mentioned before, had a young man on the program back in June, because I'm at Juneteenth Day here in Atlanta. I was at a Juneteenth Day, and sitting down, and the young man came up to me and said, hey, I know you. You're Brother Oshi. You know, you made an impact on me when I was in high school, you know, just like that sister did when I was back in Milwaukee and back in February. She came up to me, she says, Brother Oshi, and because of you, I'm a teacher. You inspired me. I was like, wow, you know. So that's why, you know, be consistent. Be honest. Be honest with yourself. Because if you're honest with yourself, you'll be honest with others. And always try and do and say your best. You never know the impact that you might make. Very excited about...
This call is being recorded.
Very excited about Friday's program. I'm going to have a guest on Friday's program. It's going to be brother who wrote The Sovereign Psyche. And that is Ezra. You know, I have a hard time pronouncing the brother's name. Joy-Han. I'll get it. I'll have it down. But yeah, he's outstanding, brother. Outstanding young man. He's in his book, which I'm trying to get, but I definitely want to introduce him to our audience and engage in conversation that I'm quite sure I know will be enlightening, and I really appreciate that. And really, more importantly, I appreciate the opportunity to talk to Dr. Ezra. I mean, I was pronouncing his name before. You know how it is, brothers and you know, and sisters. When you get a little older, sometimes what happens is, you know, you start to forget. You know, and you could have said it and done it moments earlier. And next thing you know, man, okay. That's what was interesting. I drove down, my friend John, the guy I coached football with. He drove from Milwaukee here, spent the night, and then we left here and drove to West Palm Beach. And on our way there, we kept, oh, yeah, what was it? Remember him? Yeah, okay. What's his name? Yeah, you know. But then again, the things that we did were quite a few years ago, so. Maybe that's a good excuse, or there are no excuses. Yeah. So, a couple of things I know that I want to talk about. You know, and one of them, I mentioned about. Brazil, and I really want to. Ezra Aron is the brother's name, the Sovereign Psyche. I'm going to read little excerpts from his book in a moment, but I want to put this because what I've tried to do on this program, the whole purpose of this program, once again, is to, and the only conversation that we're going to have is about independence, self-determination, liberation, and sovereignty for African people. And if we want to, once again, I've used Baba Mwalimu Baruti's definition of sovereignty. It's also in the newspaper of the African World that was published for the purpose of the Abakasan Sumsum spiritual warfare that we had back in May, and because we were recreating the 1920 Marcus Garvey convention in New York City with 25,000 of our people attended over close to a month's time to hammer out the direction for us as a people. So, and of course, one of the main things is Marcus Garvey wanted, he wanted sovereignty for African people. There are many of our scholars and historians wanted sovereignty for African people. They're not the ones that are held up by this society, because this society does not want sovereignty for African people, not on this land for sure, and not on their homeland, our homeland, not on the continent, do they want sovereignty for African people. But what is sovereignty? The successful outcome of any nationalist movement is sovereignty for the people. Being sovereign means having absolute control over the life of the nation. Right now, as always, for African people, sovereignty is measured by how intelligently, independently, and powerfully we control our resources, our story, our culture, time, space, and our destiny. It is to have power within the nation to control our lives and to control them in our best interests, regardless of opposition from outside. Accordingly, being sovereign has to mean that there is no one beyond us who makes any decisions about how we rule our lives, ourselves, how we live, what we must believe, how we deal with enemies, whether aliens or traitors, and how we visualize our future and communicate and express that vision. It means that we are completely and consciously self-defining, self-determining, self-empowered, and self-respecting. And since no nation has ever risen to power and stayed there without holding their own tradition sacred, sovereignty necessarily means that we know, respect, protect, and extend in time through every coming generation who we are has a direct reflection of our ancestors. Sovereignty is our ultimate goal. I keep asking about what is the end game? What is the end game in terms for us? Now, obviously, the end game for us has been integration, you know, and we know that through integration, we help for to have a life that we hope to have a life that is mirrored to Caucasians. You know, whatever they have, we have, and we have just as much as they have, and all this whole kind of stuff. So that is the end game that many of us believe. But of course, you know that it is not. You know, so, but no, that's not the end game. The end game should be, must be, if we are to survive as a people, must be sovereignty. Because in that way, nobody can control what happens to African people. But we have, because we want a piece of this nasty, rotten pie, we give up the idea of doing for ourselves and the idea of being collective for one of individuality and consumerism and capitalism. Brother Ezra Arahone will be my guest on Friday in the 12 o'clock hour on Friday. And here's a little excerpt from his works. Beyond racism and police shootings, African people are unknowingly in a 21st century struggle of intellectual and institutional warfare. This war is being uniquely waged on mental and ideological battlegrounds of what I define as the sovereign psyche, which will definitely become the most valuable commodity in this century. Like I said, you know, the Caucasian does not want us to be sovereign. The Sovereign Psyche is of three books that Brother Arahone has published. The Sovereign Psyche, I believe, is the last one. There's also Sovereign Evolution and Pawned Sovereignty. And I'll read a little bit from these books, giving you the idea. If anybody wants to make some comments, you can dial our number. Our number is 215-490-9832. 215-490-9832. You're listening to African Perspectives on the Motherland Media Network, on timeforanawakening.com, blacktalkradionetwork.com. The Sovereign Psyche is not just the title of a book. More importantly, the Sovereign Psyche is the motivating consciousness, intellect, and willpower that is necessary to materialize what the book defines as self-authentic freedom. Self-authentic freedom. As opposed to chattel freedom. I can definitely identify and understand what the brother is saying right there. Chattel freedom is when the value of a people is predicated upon the extent to which they serve the interests and institutions of others. Yeah. Okay. Am I being blocked here? I went to get more information and another sign came up. I tell you, it happens that way. Let's see what we got here. Here we go. Yes, here we go. Sovereign Psyche. Now, thank you for your patience. I appreciate that. What is the Sovereign Psyche and why is it highly valued? Well, to begin with, in 1943, British Prime Minister Winston Churchill delivered a coded but telling wartime speech as Germany was expanding into territorial conquest during World War II. Although the British and other European nations were imperialists themselves, who had colonized countries worldwide in their grotesque forms, the Allied powers determined that the line had to be drawn since Germany was similarly inflicting upon fellow Europeans what they had done all along throughout Africa. Hence, Churchill proclaimed that the empires of the future are the empires of the mind. In other words, instead of butchering Africans and others through colonial subjugation, Europeans could dominate the world via superior sovereign intellect, backed by superior sovereign systems and sovereign institutions. As this work demonstrates, the outcomes of this warfare has produced varying degrees of chattel freedom for African people on the continent and throughout the world. A central premise of this work, therefore, is that there is no such thing as intellectual or institutional equality between Africans and Caucasians, whether they're in America, Europe, or anywhere else. A primary cause and contributor to all racial disproportions and injustices is that Africans lack the equivalent strength of institutions and appropriate in use of our intellect, of which the solution, as I argue, hinges upon the applications of the sovereign psyche. The psyche, in general, is part of the mind where thoughts are calibrated into a motive force that causes people to correspondingly act. In short, the sovereign psyche comprises the intellect and willpower that materializes what I define as the three dimensions of sovereignty, which are self-authentic freedom, government, and development. In order for systems and institutions to function with the highest efficiency, these three dimensions must operate in a singular and synchronized fashion. Since failures or disruptions in one will render the shortfalls in the other. Thus, the degree of development of African people nations is largely proportional to the level of sovereign intellect and sovereign willpower that imperils them to act, to advance their interests and solve their problems. Is that it? Yeah. Are you kidding? My computer won't move here. Amongst its multiple meanings that include self-government, which is the highest expression of sovereignty, and I agree, self-government, that you have the ability to do for yourself. Sovereignty is an intangible substance that becomes the technology is not exact, and somehow, there you go. not moving smooth, and I'm a little perturbed by this. So, to combat chattel freedom, this work promotes self-authentic freedom, or freedom that is genuine, freedom that is not copied or superimposed, freedom that is not formulated with hypocrisy. Hypocrisy or administrated by proxy. Self-authentic freedom is a derivative of the sovereign psyche, which ensures that the ideas, institutions, and systems which govern a people are designed to promote and protect their self-interests. Based on conventional political thought, the concept and consciousness of sovereignty should be rejected outright by Africans in America. After all, freedom has presumably already been prepackaged. Whoa. What happened there? You know, sometimes, dear brothers and sisters, I think when I start to do this, it's working fine, and then when I come on to do this, it seems like there's some sabotage, you know? I think like there's some sabotage. And I thought I had, and now my computer is acting foolish. And I'm not sure exactly where my spot was. I'm going to tell you what I'm going to do when we take a break. I'm going to try to figure this out. And when I do, we'll talk more about that. Okay, let's do that. Let's bring this down and come out of this and start all over. You know, let's do that. Let's bring this down and start all over. Sometimes that's what you got to do. You know what I'm saying? Yeah, I know you do. Because sometimes when you want to do and say what you want to do and say, and then suddenly you're prevented from the ability to do what you want to do and what you want to say. But we're going to come back to that. And I want to come back to this then. Let's do this. We do have some callers on the line. We have some callers on the line, so I'm gonna unmute the phones here. And we have a caller from Georgia. Is that Brother Jeff?
Yeah, good morning, Roger.
Good morning, Brother Jeff. I want to thank you so much, my brother. Appreciate you very much for sitting in. And the program Monday sounded great with you and Dr. Rogers. I called and thanked him, and I left a message with Dr. Bridges. And I hope the listening audience enjoyed it and how you dealt with, you know, critical thinking, which, of course, is what we definitely need to do. We really need to sometimes sit down and really think things out, think about what is happening. Okay. We really need to sometimes to sit down and think about.
Okay, are you there, brother?
I'm here. Go ahead. Go ahead, Carl. Is that Jeff? Go ahead.
Yeah, we were just going to.
I know. I mean, that sounded pretty bad.
Well, yeah. We're talking about feedback.
Yeah, I'll say.
Okay. Yeah, I mean, it was a good discussion. You know, we have to get back to a point where we at least start critically thinking about the things that affects us here in this country. And like that piece you wrote, that's a perfect example that we have to be able to be self-determined. So, you know, I just.
Well, there's no doubt that the thinking that we should have. And what produces thinking is information, is knowledge, is education, is all of those things. That's why, to me, in Wade Noble's definition of power, which I think is the most definitive definition, and because power is not education and information. Because if the education you receive and the information you're receiving is flawed and inaccurate, and of course it is designed to do so, then you cannot derive real power from that. Power is not politics. If you run for office or voting, there are many, we have more people who are in elected office and more people talking about voting, but yet our condition is worse today than it was 30 years ago. Collectively, when I talk about what's happening with African people, I don't talk about what's happening with African people individually, because from an individual standpoint, there are some of us, I like to try to use the correct words or verbiage. There are some of us who are doing quite well. So I'm not talking about that. What I'm talking about, what's happening to African people collectively, and that is not so well. So when we talk about power, if you are receiving the right information, the right education, then and what power means is you have the ability to define your reality. You have the ability to define your reality, and you have the right to shape it and fashion it in your image and in your interests. Now, I'm not one to impose what we as African people want to do when we come into that reality, to impose it on others like Europeans have done. No, no, no. I want us to be able to control who we are, what we are, and what we do, and to control the land that is under our feet. Land is critical. That's why here in this country, we will never have power. We can never shape and fashion anything in this country in our image and in our interests. Prime examples that when we do something, Caucasians take it and they appropriate it. We don't control nothing here. Go ahead, Jeff.
Yeah, just get back to which, you know, when you and not have someone else impose their thoughts or this on someone, it becomes pragmatic. There's nothing working. So when we do it, because we're the one that's suffering, so it has to be us. I mean, it's, you know, I just want to be a part of something. I don't want no individual accolades about anything. I mean, I want to be able to get people to understand is that when you look at your own humanity and when you start to trying to determine, okay, how do we have control over our own destiny and not be influenced by outside influences where it affects us? And that's why we got to get back to that. You know what I'm saying? So those are the things that's is critical. It's to start thinking, how do we act in our best interest? And that's the only thing that should matter.
And that's definitely true, Brother Jeff. But the problem, of course, is that when we don't control our minds, when we don't control the thoughts, when we don't control the ideas that what would formulate us to be better men and better women and better families and communities, we don't control that. But yet. The system makes it seem like we do, because they blame us for the conditions that we live in. They blame us for the situations that we find ourselves in. They blame us for all the crime, criminality, and so forth that happens to us and within us. They blame us. But see, for me, I never blame us. I put the blame where it squarely belongs. And that is on European, Caucasian supremacy, racism, and privilege. It is that system that causes us to behave and act the way that we do. And soon as we can come together to understand that, and not that we challenge that, I think that's another faulty assumption on our part, that we can somehow march this away. We can somehow legislate this away. We can somehow pray this away. We can't do none of that. What I'm proposing, when you talk about independence, self-determination, liberation, and sovereignty, I'm saying you just break the whole thing off. Just bam, no longer am I going to consider anything that you have to say or consider anything of the way you have done. Now, granted, we have done some things, and if it's a way that we can do them and it's the way that we've done them here in America, so fine. I ain't got no problem with that. But what I'm talking about is that we chart a new course for us. I'm talking about that we think in a direction that is totally independent of what Caucasians have done and continue to do. We take a stand as men and women. We take a stand. Yes, we're going to have to defend that. I am not naive, because what I'm talking about and what I'm talking about what we must do is revolutionary. And what it means is that we will not accept. I read that definition of sovereignty periodically by Baba Baruti. We ain't asking nobody for permission. We ain't asking nobody for help. We are going to do this ourselves. And that's what we must do. What do you think, Brother Jeff?
Well, I totally agree. I mean, there's no discourse here. I mean, there's only one way of looking at it. All the things that's been taking place had not worked. We're suffering. And until we come to a collective way of thinking and understanding that it ain't about you, it ain't about me, it's about us. And when we stand as one and we start living as one, when we can see clearly that it's going to be us that do it. And I just think that anyone that's listening to this program, the responsibility lies within all of us. When you start becoming more aware, then you can start building those relationships with people who understand that we have to be the ones to do it. And when that starts to grow, and when you grow in consciousness, then, you know, we can do anything we want. We're human beings. That's what makes us equal here on this earth. It's our ability to think, to be able to look at something and just come to a reasonable conclusion about anything. Is it true or is it false? And if you're dealing with a false notion, you have to leave it alone, regardless of whatever that notion is, whether it be religion, a political position that a person may take, you know, these so-called feel-good civil rights leaders, you know, until we come together collectively, it ain't going to work. It's got to be us that do that. And I'm going to advocate that to the day I expire. You know, because then nothing else works. Turn around and look at it. Is it true or was it false? What political figure that you can name that brought us as African people out of poverty? What religious leader you can point to that says that based on what is being administered in a church, how do that translate into your economic benefit? How do that improve your personal existence? You got poor people who believe in Jesus, just like they rich folks believe in Jesus. Well, which one are you serving? It's not what you believe, it's what you should know. So that's where we fall short, because we are spiritual people and we've being misled to some large degree, our spirituality makes us vulnerable to religion. Because, you know, you got people whose a Baptist and all these different kind of religious things that they administer to people. And it doesn't result in us as a whole. It's not working. Yes, it works for them individually. It makes them feel good. But can you turn around and look at your own humanity and say why we are suffering? We are human beings, and we have every human right to be here on this earth. And we got to be able to stand up for that and be the ones to decide what direction we're going. And it's all about all the things you are often, I mean, what you talk about, but this show is totally dedicated to, is those things of us determining who we are. We set the course as to what direction we're going. And that's what the show is about, Ocean, and that's what you do, and you do it well, because you articulate that that fact every time that you're on. And it's clear to me, and I just hope that the listening audience understand this should be clear to them. It's going to be us and no one else. But
well, Brother Jeff, I thank you, and I thank you for your contribution. And every time that you're able to be on the program and or either host a program, you've done a good job, and I thank you for that. But you're right. That's what this program is about, trying to get us to understand that we must be the captains of our ship. You know, instead of trying to rearrange the deck chairs on the Titanic, because that's what this is. Just like Dr. King said to Harry Belafonte towards the end of his life, he said, "You know, I really feel like I'm trying to integrate my people into a burning building. This system is corrupt. It's not a good system. The governmental, the spiritual, the financial, none of it. To me, anything that is dominated and controlled by Caucasians and then imposed upon us is not going to be good for us. In fact, ultimately, it will mean our death collectively. Will there be a Negro here and there? Of course it would be, because that's how they like it. Now, if you want to be that happy Negro, you go ahead. And believe me, there are many of us like that who are willing to sell us out so they can have favor with Caucasians. I understand that. But the bottom line is the mass of our people has to, it is truly a time for an awakening. They have to wake up and look at this situation for what it is. As I always say, step outside of the imposed boundaries that Europeans have placed upon us. And that's the thing, because we don't understand that. We think we have our right minds. We think that we are thinking clearly. We think that the values that they have are the values that we should aspire to, that we should embrace. We believe in this idea that Caucasians are and what they want to do, because how they crafted it, how they structured it, how they presented it, that what they are, who they are, is good for the world. I remember watching a program basically talking about European imperialism, European capitalism, and so forth. And there was a saying that, you know, for General Motors, what is good for the world is what is, what is good for General Motors is what's good for the world. See, the Caucasian is arrogant. And that's what you see in the White House today. Even deeper. You've always seen it in the White House. Let me say this. Let's make no mistake about this. The mentality has always been there. The problem is now that it is so overt, and because you're dealing with a narcissistic fool. But it's always been there. The whole design of European governance is domination. and control. That's the whole design. You tell me where a European government, where Europeans came and took some stuff, and yet they still allow the indigenous people their freedom. Where they still allow the indigenous people to practice their customs and traditions forthrightly, not on a reservation, not in a concentration camp, not piecemeal. No, you won't find it. And if anything should tell you that today was what happened in Standing Rock. When the Caucasians said, well, you know, we don't want this pipeline. The Caucasians in Bismarck. We don't want this pipeline. And so what they did is say, okay, well, we won't put it to your neighborhood. Then we'll run this down through Native American territory in their lands. Through their water. And we won't ask them about it. We'll just do it. Because it, for us, this is America. And we have eminent domain. Yes, they live on reservations. Yes, they can talk about their nation this, their nation that. But to us, we don't respect those sovereignties that they claim. And to me, Standing Rock is obvious. Because every Native nation, from my understanding, has it really began to take hold? Because right around this time last year, that's what was happening. And it wasn't on the national news. It wasn't on CNN, MSNBC, ABC, CBS, NBC, Fox. It wasn't on none of them. And the only way that many of us found out about it or heard about it or read about it or have some knowledge about it was through the internet. Or there might have been some other sources, but it wasn't on the local and national news, which usually most people get their news information from. It was not on. And then Thanksgiving came. And many people sat down at dinner, said their prayer about how thankful they are and how thankful they are for the food and I understand that. That's a blessing. That's a blessing. But yet the government of this country continue to do to the indigenous people what they've always done. Because, listen, brothers and sisters, you know, when Black Lives Matter came out, and I understood Black Lives Matter. I clearly understand Black Lives Matter. Because when you are killing us the way that you're doing, we're saying our lives matter too. We matter. But unfortunately, you're speaking that to an entity that has never respected your humanity and never will. So, no, brothers and sisters, Black lives don't matter. In fact, you know what it is. That's right. It's mind over matter. They don't mind doing to us what they have done to us and what they continue to do to us because to them, we don't matter. We don't matter. Especially in today's society. Oh, maybe we mattered back in the day when we were property. When some Caucasian paid whatever he paid. And just to make sure he gets the work out of us that he paid. Because if not, he'll beat us. If not, he'll make an example of us. If not, he'll wind up either selling us, or if not, he'll kill us. There was no concern about our humanity. And the thinking that many of those Caucasians had at that time, they have today. and it is global. European supremacy, European Caucasian supremacy, racism and privilege is global. We have a caller, 602. 602, is that my good friend from Memphis?
Yes, brother. It's Brother Marcos from Memphis.
How you doing today, brother?
I'm doing all right. I'm doing all right, good brother. You know, you got the you speaking the truth. You know, is we have to implement Mr. Garvey's program. You know, we have to develop that trade, get that economic lifeline together, to make it happen. You know, now in that regard, I have a program that President Obama, ex-President Obama, had put out, you didn't hear it in the news too much because, you know, the forces that you don't want that information to come out. It's a program by Exim Bank, the U.S. Import-Export Bank, and it's designed to really expand trade in America, between America and Africa. Now, that is a program that we can utilize here in the U.S., you know. You see, if we were organized, again, that is the key, organization, and organize with our people on the continent, because the American taxpayer finance 85% of the debt of that program. See? Okay. And I think those programs, we should take benefits. We are U.S. taxpaying citizens, so why not take advantage of those programs if they are there to expand trade in Africa? You know, we have the technical expertise in this country. We have the capital to make it happen. And in all these programs, you know, we can help to develop Africa. You know, so, you know, that is my contribution as towards some solutions that we can start, you know, to implement, you know, tangible, you know, so that we can develop Africa.
I definitely agree. And if there is a U.S. program, now I'm leery of anything that the U.S., but if there is a program that justifies and righteously deals with Africans here in America taking advantage of the opportunity to invest in Africa and to support African countries and governments, you know, I'm not aware of it, but I, you know, maybe you can send me some.
Yeah, if you have a, you have an email address and that website, right? I can send it to Brother Elliot if anything.
That's fine. Send it to Brother Elliot and address it to me, or I'll give you my email right here over the phone. I mean, right here over the air, you know, if you want to take
but
it.
I ain't got no place where I can write.
Okay,
write,
then that's
write,
fine.
Or,
but
I'm going to get it. I'll get the information to you. And those programs, we can utilize them, as I say. It's just a matter of us organizing ourselves properly, because the way it works is the African have to apply for the funding, you see? And the problem is they don't have the 15% deposit to put up. But by us organizing, you know, we can make that happen for them on that side, and at the same side, we work this side too. And we pull ourselves up using the same American system here, because again, that is taxpayer money. We are taxpayers, so you know, you justify us utilizing these programs towards our benefit.
Well, I can say that if that is the case, I look forward to the information. I look forward to presenting it to our listening audience in terms of what can be done. I was going to read today, but my computer is acting kind of funny. But on not just the Sovereign Psyche, who is going to be my guest, Brother Ezra Ahone, will be my guest this Friday, the author of The Sovereign Psyche. It's going to be an outstanding conversation, so I look forward to all of you guys. Please listen and hopefully to be able to chat with him over the airwaves here on Friday. But, you know, there's nothing to me more important than African people coming together and beginning to do what we're always talking about doing, and that's doing for self. To me, there's nothing more important. And if there's ways that we can do it, if there's programs that are available for us to do it, we should look into them and into the validity of those programs and how sound they are, so we can move forward on that. So we're going to take Brother Marcus. We're gonna take a break, and when we come back from the break, there'll be more discussion. You are listening to African Perspectives here on the Motherland Media Network on TimeForAnAwakeningRadio.com and BlackTalkRadioNetwork.com. We'll be right back. We'll be right back. Welcome back, brothers and sisters. You're listening to African Perspectives here on the Motherland Media Network on TimeForAnAwakeningRadio.com and BlackTalkRadioNetwork.com. Other programs that are appearing on the network, of course, I mentioned earlier, Elliot, Brother Elliot's program, him and Brother Richard, their program airs every Friday and Sunday. Friday from 8 to 11 and Sunday from 7 to 10. These are PM Eastern times. Also, we have sisters coming on today with her program this evening. I think she's from 8 to 10 this evening. Revive, I think it is. Program Revive right here on Time for an Awakening Radio. Thursday, tomorrow, Us Lifting Us. I believe they're going to be willing. I mean, they broadcast the last 2 weeks, and they're going to run their own program tomorrow, and I'm looking forward to it and listening to it. Us Lifting Us, 9 p.m. Eastern Time. 9 p.m. Eastern Time, the Economic Development Cooperative for Our People, Us Lifting Us, ULU. And I'm quite sure to talk about, and I'm very excited about the cafe that has been established here in Atlanta, where we hope to open before the year's end. There's still a lot of work that needs to be done, and it is being done, and I'm very excited about that, very proud to be a member of Us Lifting Us. Every Saturday, we'll be here Friday, of course, right here, and I mentioned that my guest, brother who wrote the Sarvan Saki, Brother Ezra Rahone. And then on Saturday, Dr. William Rogers, Black Reality Think Tank. On Saturdays, right here on the Motherland Media Network, on TimeForAnAwakening.com, from 4 p.m. to 6 p.m., from 4 p.m. to 6 p.m. Eastern Time, Dr. William Rogers. So, and once again, I really do thank Brother Jeff, and Brother Jeff is definitely trying to work with the technical ends of things, helping us to make sure that those of us who are joining Time for an Awakening Radio and BlackTalkRadioNetwork.com are getting in the right things and doing the right thing. So thank you for that. I'm going to do this because I've been trying to do this since last week, is to play this piece on Brazil. It is timely, regardless of what we're talking about, because what we're talking about is a global system of European Caucasian supremacy, racism, and privilege. And the irony of Brazil is that there are more Africans in Brazil than any country except Nigeria. In fact, over 50% of the people in Brazil are of African descent. Over 50%. But yet, they don't know they're African, and they have no idea what the hell they're up against. Here's a piece I think you'll enjoy.
50% of the Brazilian population is of African descent. You can see the legacy of the slave trade in the faces here. Brazil was the last country in the Western world to abolish slavery. It did so in 1888, 20 years after the U.S. did. But despite the fact that more than half this country has African roots, you may have noticed that almost all of the faces that you have seen so far in the clips that we've shown you from Brazilian television, either corporate media or religious channels, have one thing in common. They're white.
If you turn on the TV in Brazil, there are hardly any black actors or presenters, hardly any black journalists. This is across all of the mainstream channels. We are not seen there. The invisibility of black people in spaces of power is glaring.
Just go to the newsroom of any newspaper or television station and look at the journalists working there. Almost all of them are white. So the coverage of black people on television or in the Brazilian news must go through the hands and the work of the white journalist.
This kind of television reinforces stereotypes all the time. It reinforces the myth of racial democracy and that everyone has rights and equality and everything is okay. So when certain issues are covered, for example, when we try to raise the issue of black genocide, that every 23 minutes a young black person is murdered in Brazil, how does it end up being portrayed? It's always shootouts in the peripheries and the criminals were killed. There isn't even a narrative that serves to inform the public of the facts in Brazil, a country that was the last in the world to abolish slavery.
The depiction of that Brazilian reality does not just occur in news programming. The same can be seen on the entertainment side and the Brazilian soap operas known as telenovelas. Telenovelas are an integral part of the Brazilian media story for reasons both social and financial. A successful telenovela will capture huge audiences, routinely in the tens of millions. Their plot twists will drive everyday conversation in Brazil. For the networks producing them, all of which faced the economic challenges born of the digital revolution, telenovelas are still cash cows. One of them, Globo's Avenida Brasil, reportedly delivered ad revenues of about $1 billion.
Avenida Brasil.
And telenovelas have something that Brazilian news programs do not. They have international reach. Globo's flagship newscast, Jornal Nacional, dominates domestic news ratings here, but relatively few people outside Brazil will ever see it. Telenovelas are an export industry. Avenida Brasil has been transmitted in 130 countries in 19 languages. In that respect, telenovelas are the face that Brazil shows to the world. And much like the country's newscasters, the faces that get shown are nothing less than a misrepresentation of what Brazil really is. Because again, they're mostly white.
In the soap operas of Brazil, we have a rich world, a happy world, a white world. What is it that a soap opera does? It enters the general public's home and tells a child who is still growing up what they are not going to be. The places they cannot reach. Brazilian private television does this every day. Every day. For example, in adaptations of books in which the main characters are black, when they make them into TV series, they cast them as white.
E de que me adianta querer? Sou uma escrava, uma fugitiva.
And when we ask, why did you put a white actor to play the role of a black character? They say, it doesn't make a difference. And this has happened in some very famous series in Brazil in the past, like Isaura, the Slave, and Chiquinha Gonzaga.
A senhora Dona Isabel toca piano? Há alguém no Rio de Janeiro que não toque? Os escravos. Os escravos não tocam piano.
It may not happen today, because now we have a platform where we are able to protest. Because of the internet, we can make some noise. After a lot of pressure from the black movement, you can see, little by little, black actors gaining leading roles in soap operas.
Uma o quê? Vamos completar a frase. Uma negra, não é isso que você disse?
However, it is an illusion to think that placing a black person on television solves the problem. The way that black people are portrayed in most of the mainstream media follows and legitimizes the structural racism that we have in Brazil. Because the successful world, the world that works, is white. And then when the commercials come on, a white person comes along as the representative of buying power, of acquisitive power. And then afterwards, when the news comes on, there's a black person robbing, there's a black person being arrested. So every day, private television in Brazil attacks Brazilians.
Finally, back to Globo and the story of the Brazilian TV beauty queen, Nayara Justino. As examples of media malpractice in this country go, it is nowhere near the worst, but it is revealing. The title, Mulata Globaleza, was created by Globo. It's a beauty contest tied to its coverage of Brazil's annual carnival. That word, mulata, which some say has its roots in the word mula, meaning mule, is considered racist. A word loaded with colonial connotations, chosen by Globo for a beauty contest ostensibly held to celebrate racial integration. Viewers get to vote for the Globaleza, and 2014 marked a first. The winner, Nayara Justino, was dark-skinned and unmistakably black.
A Globaleza 2014 é Nayara.
Not everyone approved. Online trolls call Justino a monkey, a darkie. A few months later, Globo had Justino replaced. It set the results of the vote aside and simply picked another woman.
Globo insisted that its decision had nothing to do with skin color, that the choice came down to artistic fitness for the role. It said artistic merit prevails.
The woman Globo picked to replace Justino had African roots as well, but her skin tone is much lighter. And, as one of the country's relatively few newsreaders of African descent will tell you, in the Brazilian media, racial integration has its limits.
I'm a black woman, but I have a skin tone that is a little lighter. And I can say that I am privileged in this, because the darker your skin is, the more you have to suffer in Brazil.
There was an official whitening policy in Brazil. The initiative that brought European immigrants here after the abolition of slavery was not accidental. It was done in order to whiten the population, because they believed that within 200 years, there would be no more blacks in Brazil. But we're still here, in this country, which still denies its African origins and which runs on the idea that the whiter, the better.
In a way, the story of that beauty queen typifies the way Globo sees Brazil. Back in 1964, the network supported a military coup that brought down a government Brazilians had voted for. 2 years ago, Globo called its viewers onto the streets to help depose another democratically elected government. Globo is not even above overturning a public vote for a beauty queen if the choice of the people fails to align with the network's idea of who should represent Brazil.
And just another consistent example of what I've been talking about on this program since this program's inception. Everywhere on this planet, as Dr. Bobby Wright said, and please go get Dr. Bobby Wright's book, Psychopathic Racial Personality, small book, brilliant essay. He also talks about menticide, the deliberate destroying of a people's mind. And that's what we've been experiencing, menticide. But he says wherever they are, and we are, Europeans, us, Africans, Europeans are in the positions of dominance and control, and we are in a subservient position. It doesn't matter where it is. And just as Dr. John Henry Clark said, we have no friends. You want a friend? Go look in a mirror. And don't leave that mirror until you like what you see. Not about your hairstyle, the arch of your eyebrows, or the shape of your damn nose. No, like who you see culturally. Like who you see spiritually. Like who you see consciously. Like who you are. Love who you are as an African person. We have a caller. Go ahead, Brother Ikwani. What's up? How you doing?
Hotel,
dear brother.
Uncle Justin there, brother. How you doing, Brother Osh?
I'm doing fine. What about you? You doing okay?
Yes, sir. I'm doing okay.
Good.
Getting better and better day by day. Lost a great pillar in my life last week, which was my 89-year-old grandmother. Lost her physically, but definitely gained an ancestor.
That's right. Well, my sincere and deepest condolences to you and your family on that loss. And you're right, because they're always there. They're always with you. I always feel the spirit of my mother with me, even though my mother couldn't understand, you know. Cause my mother worked in houses for Jews. She did day work, and so she liked what they like, you know. She liked the Europe, but I love my mother anyway. But I had to be who I am, and I had to embrace who we are as African people. I felt that was right for me. That's what made me feel good. But she respected that. She be, because when I changed my, because when I changed my name, I went to her and I said, I'm going to change my name. She said, knowing you, you're going to do it anyway, so go ahead. And that's, that was her line. But much love and much respect. And so I wish you sincere condolences, dear brother.
Thank you. Thank you, brother. Thank you. And even as we're talking about that conditioning that has plagued us, because my grandmother, she was the mother, single mother, of seven children. And she was born in 1928. Coming up in the Southern America, around that time, as a dark-skinned, short lady, with that many children, a lot of times, you know, it wasn't the aid of what they call the welfare system.
That's
wasn't
right.
Any free food or anything of that nature that people were getting from the system. So definitely when we're able to see that strength inside our people, and in particular my grandmother, because she would share the stories of her past and, you know, the things, how she saw life. And it is oftentimes something that we as a people miss, because so many times we're so busy doing what the Western world says we have to do and in order to be, quote unquote, involved, rather than doing some of the things like, you know, sitting with your grandparents or having a nice glass of tea or going over to take them a warm pie, you know, just simple things like that. Because we are in the age of technology, we're over playing games and we're over here doing this. And a lot of times that olden way, it gets severed. And I think this is that cloth, that fabric, that a lot of times it manifests as being severed on a more physical level as well. And, you know, therefore you start to see the bleaching of the skin. You start to see the washing away of, you know, your deep culture, your organic tradition. You want to throw that away and compromise that for the new technological age of Western come up that basically is entrenched in monopoly and capitalism. You know, we everybody got to get them some. If you want to be down, you better be doing some of this. And like I say, a lot of times those olden ways are forgotten. And even looking at my grandmother, 89 years old, she had that picture of white Jesus up. And even me as now her descendant, because she is my ancestor, I am the one to carry the torch for her. I will not down talk her.
Right.
Inside saying, right. Well, she was, you know, what I will say is that she had an overwhelming amount of greatness that definitely overshadowed those small things. So what I will do, inside being the Haru, or being the one that is redeeming my father, Osea, in which we know Osea basically means ancestor. And we are the ones that are the new fresh breed, the new life. We are the ones that are going to carry the torch, cutting the waste set. We're going to defeat Sutesh in his evil, deceptive ways of chaos. So therefore, even in times like this, where we're talking about the white Jesus and this level of African integrity that has been lost, I will remember my grandmother, put her name, her pictures, everything on my shrine, ancestral shrine, and we will forget about that white Jesus. We are going to now, inside me producing the children of her lineage, with us having new children, we will erase that image of that white Jesus that had plagued our people. So therefore, that being one negative thing that we, while keeping the great things that they had upon us, therefore, hopefully rolling out, completing a snowball effect where we're gaining momentum. And this is what our ancestors often did in times of even building the pyramids, because we do know that it was over generations that they would complete this thing. You know, it wasn't just over 50 years or 100 years.
Right.
It would be even after the life of that ancestor, that the children of that lineage would continue doing the work. So, hey, I'm happy to do that work, happy to share her story. She was definitely a great singer, and she did a lot of great things. And like I said, happy to be able to share that story as it relates to the story you're talking about, gaining more African integrity about ourselves in the today for the tomorrow.
Well, right on, dear, right on, dear brother. I appreciate that. I appreciate you sharing that with us. And really, sometimes our ancestors help us more than when they were living by the inspiration and the guides they give us and the lives that they led. You know,
that's right.
So, you know, just because they've moved on into ancestor realm does not mean that they, you know, that it's over for them. No. They'll continue to motivate, inspire, and guide us if we tap into that. If we open our hearts and our minds to receive our ancestors. I know for those who are steeped in Christianity, you know, they don't talk about ancestor veneration. You know,
that's right.
You know, in fact, they are against it because supposedly the person dies and their soul goes to heaven to be with Jesus, you know, or goes to hell because of the life that they led, you know. But for us as African people, there is nothing like that. It is that we have done great things on earth in our time, in our physical time here, and we can continue to do great things after we have transitioned because of the lives that we led, you know, and we can continue to motivate and inspire and guide our people. So we're talking today, Brother Ikwani, about sovereignty. Friday, I'm going to have as a guest Brother Ezra Erahon, who is a author and wrote the book, The Sovereign Psyche. The Sovereign Psyche. I'm going to read. Finally, I got it up, family. I'm going to read this. And so for the next half hour, we'll discuss the importance of sovereignty for African people. The piece on Brazil, I had to get that in because I've been trying it, and I finally found it, had it working, and I wanted to make sure that I got it. I was speaking about that last week and caught that on Al Jazeera. Unfortunately, Al Jazeera doesn't come on in the States anymore, I don't believe. I don't know if they're – I know the two cable or satellite entities that I had here, Al Jazeera was not offered, you know. But I really do like Al Jazeera. I like any news programming that presents multiple sides of issues. You know, that's why I can't stand Fox. Fox News is sickening. I mean, it is sickening, you know. But and CNN ain't no better. ABC, CBS, NBC, Fox, but all of them, you know, especially as it relates to dealing with issues affecting African people objectively. And it's not in order to do so because everything, just as Dr. Francis Cress Welsing said, everything in European society is designed to maintain and sustain the privilege that they created for themselves. Everything. Religion, education, economics, law, you name it, entertainment, all of it, sports, all of it is shaped and fashioned in their image and for their interests. And the only thing that we do is provide entertainment within those entities or provide a place that is very uncomfortable for us collectively. It may be comforting for an individual who aspires to be an entertainer or sports athlete or whatever. But for us collectively, no, it was never meant for that to happen. And believe me, it will never happen. I know some of us want it to happen so bad. But yet we continue to hold out hope and we continue to pray. We continue to march and demonstrate and all that other stuff. as opposed to saying, you know what, bump them and bump that. Let's close ranks. Let's pull our resources. Let's do for ourselves. Sovereign Psyche, systems of chattel freedom versus self-authentic freedom. If perhaps you are unaware, African people, of whom I'm among one, are in a 21st century struggle of intellectual institutional warfare that is being waged on mental and ideological battlegrounds, of which I define as the sovereign psyche, which I deem to be the most prized commodity of this century. What is the sovereign psyche, and why is it so highly valued? Well, to begin with, in 1943, Winston Churchill, British Prime Minister Winston Churchill, delivered a coded but telling wartime speech as Germany was expanding its territorial conquest during the Second World War. Although Britain and other European nations were imperialists themselves, who had colonized countries worldwide in grotesque forms, the Allied powers determined that a line had to be drawn, since Germany was similarly inflicting upon fellow Europeans what they had been doing all along throughout Africa. Hence, Churchill proclaimed that the empires of the future are the empires of the mind. In other words, instead of butchering Africans and others through colonial subjugation, Europeans would dominate the world via superior sovereign intellectual intelligence backed by superior sovereign systems and sovereign institutions. As this work demonstrates, the outcomes of this warfare have produced varying degrees of chattel freedom for African people worldwide. A central premise of this work, therefore, is that there is no such thing as intellectual or institutional equality between Africans and Caucasians. Let me repeat that. There is no such thing as intellectual or institutional equality between Africans and Caucasians, not just here in America, but wherever. A primary cause and contributor to all racial disproportionates are injustices that American Africans lack the equivalent strength of institutions and appropriate end of use of our intellect, of which the solution is, as he argues, hinges upon applications of the sovereign psyche. The psyche in general is part of the mind where thoughts are calibrated into a motive force that causes people to correspondingly act. In short, the sovereign psyche comprises the intellect and willpower that materializes what I define as the three dimensions of sovereignty, which are self-authentic freedom, government, and development. In order for systems and institutions to function with the highest efficiency, these three dimensions must operate in singular and succinct fashion. Since failures or disruptions in one will render shortfalls in the other. Thus, the degree of development of people or nations is largely proportional to the level of sovereign intellect and sovereign willpower that propels them to act to advance their interests and solve their problems. Among its multiple meanings that include self-government, which is the highest expression of sovereignty, self-government. Sovereignty is an intangible substance that becomes visible through products and symbols which people must self-create. In this sense, sovereignty's foremost is the energizing mindset, consciousness, and thought process by which people define and express freedom through the unique particularities of their political and ideological self-identities. So aside from establishing a nation or state, sovereign principles can be applied by individuals, families, groups, and communities who cooperate as cohesive unit with the understanding and the aim of making their self-interest primary. This is a central message of this work because a key to redressing the man-made inequalities of African people lies in a activating the sovereign consciousness in our minds in order to implement sovereignty practices in our daily lives. In this sense, sovereignty relates to the realizing our inalienable rights of life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness as African people, even here in America. I can understand that. I can't wait till our guest gets here Friday so we can talk about these things. Chattel freedom, as I apply this term, entails being tied to systems and institutions that not only fail to amply protect and advance our interests, but the interests of others are advanced at our expense. To combat chattel freedom, this work promotes self-authentic freedom, or freedom that is genuine, freedom that is not copied or superimposed, freedom that is not formulated with hypocrisy or administrated by proxy. Self-authentic freedom is a derivative of the sovereign psyche, which ensures that the ideas, institutions, and systems which govern a people are designed to promote and protect their self-interest. Based on conventional political thought, the concept and consciousness of sovereignty should be rejected outright by Africans in America. After all, freedom has presumably already been prepackaged for us through Jeffersonian democracy, which is self-acclaimed by Europeans to be more judicious and moralistic than any other political system in the world. However, this work performs sovereign analysis and interpretations of history which uncover the unprincipled nature of practices of Jeffersonian democracy as being the core and cause of racism, past and present. By being unprincipled, I'm asserting that Jeffersonian democracy is deliberately designed and practice in ways that are insufficient to redress the most critical of African needs and issues. I say. This book is fast, moving, and concise, meaning that the topics are not prolonged and critiques are not exhaustive. Subjects and realizations are rather broached to introduce ideas and redefine concepts that should be explored and applied. In this sense, the context serves as a handbook of sovereign principles, standards, and doctrines that are intended to expand the discourse and boundaries of which 21st century freedom for African people should be entailed. Finally, regardless of your political or ideological leanings, the world today rotates upon various axes of sovereign power. And although this work specifically relates to African people, the sovereign functions, frameworks, and principles that I identify are universal. People worldwide apply the same sovereign criteria that outline herein to define, design, and implement what they deem to be self-authentic freedom, government, and development. In this context, the concepts of this work are far more rational than radical, being that the sovereign psyche will undoubtedly continue to be the driving force of freedom and the most valued commodity of the 21st century. That's the excerpt from The Sovereign Psyche. Remember, I said there's some other books that Brother Ezra Arahon has produced. But we will be talking with him on Friday in the 12 o'clock hour. I look forward to it. I hope that you do too. I hope you have your questions ready, that you would dial 215-490-9832. 215-490-9832. So you can give us your African perspective on what the brother was presenting for the sovereign psyche. You know, for me, there is no other challenge for us. There is no other issues. You know, I say it all the time that the only discussion that we as African people should be having is the discussion for our independence, our self-determination, our liberation, and our sovereignty. Everything else is bull. That's the only thing that we need to discuss. How are we going to achieve this? And to me, there is no debate amongst us about whether we should be sovereign or not, or free or not, or self-determining or not, or liberated or not. That's crazy. The only discussion be, how can we come together to do it? Because not to do it is that means that you have acquiesced, you have capitulated to the European dominance that has been imposed upon you and that controls your everyday life, that has your mind, that causes you to think and behave the way you do, even though you think you have your own mind, even though you think that the decisions that you make and the conclusions that you come to are yours. No, they are not. It is part of your training. No, it is not. And to think otherwise is so foolish, but we do. Like I said, you know, to me, that's the probably the most hurting thing. Number one, I don't want to battle with anybody. I don't want to have a debate with Caucasians for sure. Number one, is fruitless, because they are the ones that put us in this situation. And they want us to believe that we are the ones that are at fault for being in it. Now, I would say this. They are the ones that put us in it. That is true. But the responsibility for getting us out of it, that is ours and ours alone. And I know we appeal to them, we beg them, we sit in, we march, we demonstrate, we pray, we vote, we do all those things to make the Caucasian change so we can participate in his system more peacefully.
Mm-hmm.
That's what we do. So we can participate in his system without being called names. And we hope that we won't get discriminated against. We want to participate in the system and say that the system should judge me on my merits, judge me on my abilities, as if somehow they can rationally and equally and fairly do that. When all the statistics prove otherwise. I think that's one thing that has been interesting for me in my quest for knowledge of self over these many, many years. I'm talking about a long time, brothers and sisters. I'm 65 years old, well over half my life. Because even when I was young, I got into the movements of the 60s. Okay, I dropped off, got high in the 70s. You know, did some foolish stuff in the 80s. It happens, you know. But since that time, my life is dedicated to raising the consciousness of African people. And it is extremely difficult. Because to do it collectively. Because now, just as I stated earlier today and some other times on the program, when a person says, "Oh, Brother Oshie, I remember you from back in school and this and that, and you did this and that, and now I'm doing this and that," I love that. I appreciate that. It's humbling, and I thank you. And I will continue to do it, because that's what I'm trying to do, is raise the consciousness of African people so that we can become a collective mindset, so we can move ourselves forward and be independent and be liberated and be sovereign. The Caucasians, they had that idea, and that's what they did. And we have every right as human beings to do the same. And not that we're going to impose who we are on anybody. Take all what I'm claiming. Now, I'm not claiming that we as African people are also indigenous. We're Indians. We're Native Americans. I'm not claiming that. I don't want to deal with that. And I know there's some brothers and sisters that do want to deal with that. And that's fine. And that's fine, because there's some brothers and sisters who want to claim that so they can also to claim the hardship that they have experienced because of being an indigenous person, a Native American person, and of course, to get the reparations or the payments from that. And that's fine. That's fine. But what I want to do is for us to recognize that we are an African people. That we are an African people on the continent and throughout the diaspora. And then we embrace that. We're one African. We embrace that. And now we reclaim Africa. We kick the I'm telling you, yo, let me just say this, you know, Brother Ikwani, I know you're still out there. Let me just say this.
Yes, sir.
We really don't have time. Time is of the essence for us in this battle, because the European and the Chinese and others, the Indians, are moving. They are moving, and they are acquiring African land on the continent. There are Chinese that are even marrying African women so they can clearly stake that claim for the land and its resources. So they are moving. So in our discussions, we need to move this from the discussion stage. And I'm truly willing to work with anybody who is saying, let's move it from the discussion stage to the practical stage of educating ourselves, preparing ourselves for Africans on the continent and Africans throughout the diaspora to come home to build Africa, build roadways, build highways, build ports, build schools, build hospitals, build communities, connect Africa, the United States of Africa, if you want to call it that, or the Federated States of Africa, as Dr. Sheikh Ajit-Jop termed it. Whatever the case may be, the vision of Kwame Nkrumah, the vision of Patrice Lumumba, the vision of, yes, Idi Amin Dada, who the West claimed was a cannibal, because he kicked them Indians out of Uganda, and because he suppressed the opposition. Yes, I would like opposition to be peaceful, and then when opposition loses, to come together to still work for the good of the whole. Because to me, there is no total conflicting ideologies. It should be just one ideology, and that is for African people to come into the existence of themselves and to do for themselves, to be players in the world instead of the pawns that we have become. We're not.
And Brother Oshie.
Yes, sir. Go ahead.
I just wanted to say that's why a lot of our systems, even going back to our most cultivated system on the Nile Valley, it pointed back to African spirit. The importance of, and like you say, the will too. Why would people want to go back and invest in Africa? Is because they have an internal will to say, well, hey, I feel good about Africa. I want to go over there and support people that look like me. That thing has been diminished. We know how to work out on our biceps and triceps. We know how to make our traps and our chest muscles get really, really big. But with what we haven't worked on developing is that internal will to support who you are organically. Who we are organically is African. So when we don't have a vehicle that supports that, you understand, everything else is very confusing. So that is where we are. We may go very far. We're getting a lot of money, getting a lot of wealth. We got a lot of businesses, but inside, internally, we haven't gathered our heart. We haven't gathered our mind. We haven't gathered the integration between our heart and mind working together to give us a functional person. to give us a functional community, to give us, you understand? And this
Definitely.
Is what I'm seeing.
Definitely.
And that's why our ancestors always pointed to spirituality. They talked about if you want to groom yourself to be perfect on the exterior, you have to groom yourself to be perfect on the interior first. This is the only way. And a lot of times our people want to skip over that inside trying to create this new tomorrow. But I say if our ancestors saw it as being important, inside them building the civilizations that were able to rule for thousands of years, I'm like, well, hey, if we're going to say anything is going to work, I'm like, well, hey, why don't we appreciate that and go back to accept? But a lot of our people, we don't even appreciate that, brother. So I think it's something very much internally we do have to have in order to get this functionality of things externally that we want to have for ourselves, man.
There's no doubt we have to purge ourselves of all of that ignorance, all of that self-doubt, all of the things that have been imposed upon us to make us think or believe that we can't do it. And so because that is so strong, you repel it, and truly not only do you repel it, but you don't move. You become catatonic. You don't move in that direction, and that's where we are, you see. So, Brother Iguani, you're definitely correct, you know. And so what I try to do, at least as the beginning stages of with this program and other programs right here on Time for an Awakening, which Brother Elliot, Brother Richard on Fridays and on Sundays, Fridays from 8 to 11 and Sundays from 7 to 10, and other programs here with Ulu. Because, I mean, what we talked about today, it fits Ulu correctly in terms of pulling resources. It talks about cooperative economics, family economics, pulling the resources to do for ourselves, and that no one individual or little small group or clique gets the lion's share of any profit or any share of the entity. It is shared by all. And that is an African way. And so that's what I'm constantly promoting on this program, is the idea of doing for self. We must develop an education system. As I watch some programs, and I watch TV One every morning, Monday through Fridays, News One Now on TV One with Fathead Roland Martin. I wish he quit calling our ancestors slaves. But anyway, and he's been here in Atlanta. And I'll catch him somewhere down the road and have a conversation with him, I hope. But it'll be a good conversation. I hope that it would be, because I'm not confrontational. And I want to be confrontational. But I just want to develop some reasoning, some understanding of the words. He said it himself, that words convey meaning. Words mean a lot. Well, if that's the case, in fact, we become so synonymous with that word and the other divisive and ugly and vile words that are used. That's why I don't use nigger, and I don't use to describe each other, to describe ourselves. I hate that word. I understand what the root of that word and its evil meaning. I don't use bitch to describe our women, which is a female dog. I don't use those things because of my intense and sincere and undying love for who we are. Because to me, to say that you do that and yet you say something other than that is a contradiction. You know, it's the height of hypocrisy. And we have been very hypocritical in how we deal with one another. Not so much with the Caucasian, because the cracker, he knows that he has our minds. He knows that he has our minds through the fear that he has put into us. Because it is fear that controls us. Fear. Fear what they're going to do, what they're going to say, how they're going to react. Fear. And the other thing is that I don't, you know, because of that fear, I want favor. I want to be by him. I want to live near him. I want what he has. As opposed to saying, bump you, I'm not afraid anymore. I'm taking back my own mind. I don't give a damn what you say. I don't give a damn what you do. I'll fight to the death for my freedom, for my independence, for my liberation. I'll fight to the death to be a sovereign man and woman. You know, we're about to close out, Brother Ikwani. I thank you for sharing some time with me. You got anything else to say before we go, dear brother?
No, sir. Just say, you know, just follow our spirits, follow our true hearts and minds, and you know, wherever your attention goes, your energy shall follow. So,
right on.
Just keep all that good stuff in mind, man. It's a good show, Brother Osha, as always.
Well, thank you, dear brother. I appreciate your contribution, and of course, Brother Jeff, and all that Brother Jeff has done and continues to do.
Yes, sir.
And all the other listeners, really appreciate it. We end every program with the words of Stephen Biko. Now, before I give you those words, I want to remind everybody to please have contact some others and to remind them about the show this Friday. I got Brother Ezra Arahon, who is author of The Sovereign Psyche and some other books dealing with sovereignty for African people. He will be my guest in the 12 o'clock hour. I'm looking forward to that. I hope that you are too, and that you will join us as that program airs on this Friday. Stephen Biko said, the most potent weapon in the hands of the oppressor, the Caucasian, the European, the cracker, the most potent weapon in the hands of the oppressor is the minds of the oppressed. And this program is dedicated to freeing the African mind. So, my dear brothers, be back here with us again this Friday from 11 a.m. to 1 p.m. Eastern Time for African Perspectives, right here on the Motherland Media Network on timeforanawakening.com and blacktalkradio.com. Peace, family.